Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yes, guys, what's going on? Welcome to the Devils Podcast. I am Adam McCullough. He is Joe Smith. We were supposed to have Mr. Stephen Arson with us, but he is being his typical diva self. And what we want you guys to do is at Mr. Stephen Arson, at Stretford Paddock, without the O, I think it is, on Twitter.
The second, though.
What should we get them to tweet, Steve, with abuse?
Like, what, bring back Steve. Hashtag no, bring back Steve.
That's too nice.
That's too
that
nice.
Makes him feel appreciated. We need to make him feel like he's let everybody down.
Feel some shame.
Yeah.
No shame.
Shame on you.
Shame on you.
Yeah, shame on you. Just tweet Steve the three words. Shame on you. At Mr. Stephen Arson. At Stretford Paddock. And it's a guarantee one of you will be involved in an argument with Stephen Arson over the weekend. Because he'll take it the wrong way. And it'll unfurl tragically. But get involved. And get that engagement going. But we're here to have a little chat. We've got Harry Maguire to talk about, Bruno Fernandes to talk about, the Newcastle game to talk about, Golden Boy to talk about. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that a film back in the day with Eddie Murphy? Golden Child.
Was it? Golden Child. Maybe.
Was Eddie Murphy in that? Or am I confused?
I don't think I've seen
it. Never seen Golden Child.
Well, you don't know that much about it to say you've seen it.
No, I do, because it was a little bald kid, and I remember my brother shaved his head and used to call him the Golden Child. Yeah, Eddie Murphy was in it. And this was the kid in it. Golden Child.
It definitely looks like it's a child.
You don't remember this film?
No. Honestly, I don't know if I've only seen about three Eddie Murphy films.
Which one?
Sacrilegious as that is to say.
Which one's that? It can't be Nutty Professor 1 and 2.
Why can't it? Why can it not be at least two of them?
Okay, but have you seen his stand-ups then?
I've seen Dr. Dolittle.
No.
What? No. I've seen it. Yeah, I've not seen his stand-up. I've seen his stand-up.
What's it called? What do you think?
Yeah, really.
Delirious and Raw.
Delirious. Delirious is the main one I've seen.
Some of it hasn't aged greatly.
Some of it's nowadays, a bit aggressive these days.
Yeah, nowadays you get cancelled for a lot of it. But anyway, let's move on from that. Harry Maguire. You may as well have been cancelled this week, the way the internet's been reacting to Maguire. First up, let's talk about it from a footballing perspective, because we have to put everything into a footballing context, because that's what we're here to talk about. Do you know what I mean? What is going on with Aaron Maguire right now?
He looks mentally, he just looks shaken. I know we'll move on to that a bit more, but physically on the pitch, what is going on is he's making mistakes more than he did. And I know people would give him stick last season and say he wasn't worth the money and all that. And most of the criticism seems to be centered around this £80 million price tag that he's got or that he had last season. But what is happening on the pitch is he's making a lot of mistakes this season. And pretty much since lockdown, we came back from lockdown, he hasn't looked himself, I don't think. And it's compounded that this season with the trouble he had in Mykonos, with what seems to be a sort of a general swell of disapproval or dislike towards him on social media and online. And we know that he's someone that sort of sees those things online, maybe more than some, or that he, you know, is aware of the opinions about him, which obviously doesn't help when they're negative opinions. I think he got a lot of unfair stick last season after improving the squad by, like we've said over and over again, 30 goals on the season before that. And I think a lot of that comes down to him. Wan-Bissaka as well can get some of the credit for that. But I think in terms of being the captain and coming in and changing the way that the squad is, you know, it approaches games and the way that the defence sort of stops goals going in, you've got to give him credit for that. But he didn't always get that. And then I went on to that, what I see as sort of semi-unfair treatment of him anyway. You went on to the fact that now he is performing very badly for England and for Manchester United. It's just become a sort of a crescendo of disapproval towards him, hasn't it?
Because I think it's people that are just saying he needs to be dropped. I think it almost looks like, I feel like Southgate and Solskjaer, more Solskjaer because he's not on international duty anymore, have to take the responsibility. Because look, Harry Maguire's been available for every Premier League game. Look, for half of the season last year, I remember most people saying he was a nominee for player of the year. And then I think after lockdown, I think he took a massive dip in form. I think obviously the Greek situation hasn't helped. Whoever's fault you want to, you know, put wherever you want to put the blame on that, we know it hasn't helped. At a time when he should have been taking his mind off the game, relaxing, recuperating, mentally, he would have been all over the shop. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then to come back, no preseason, straight back into the team, a team that is performing badly, and he is contributing to that. So it's not like he's not to blame, but he's contributing to that. And then to go to England when you're away from everything, and you think maybe I can go away and get a little break, and then it happens again. And I think seeing him trudge off that pitch yesterday, I believe he should be held accountable for poor performances. But I also, I'm a bit soft in that I see the human side in everybody, and kind of just looking at him walk off like that, like, I just felt like someone needs to go give him a hug, firstly. But secondly, like, I think he just needs to be like, give him 2 weeks with his family or something. Obviously, don't send him to Greece or anything like that, but give him 2 weeks away from everything, out of the spotlight, and then say, come back and fight for your spot. Do you know what I mean? Because I think as well, with the armband, he's kind of given a spot at the moment that he maybe hasn't earned. But then again, every other defender has been poor, so it's not just him. But I think maybe at the moment, because he's got the armband, 80 million, Ollie feels pressured into playing him every week. Just take him out the firing line. I think playing him against Newcastle, I don't see what benefit comes of it, because I don't see him just switching it on like that at the moment.
It's hard to know, isn't it? And some players benefit from playing him through the bad times. People like Wayne Rooney, I always thought, was someone who you get the best out of him, or the best way to bring him out of a difficult time is to play him and let him prove the haters wrong, or prove the press wrong, or prove whoever wrong. We've seen that multiple times with Wayne Rooney. Other players, they need, like you said, give him a break, take him out the firing line, let him take a minute, you know, a back step, a back seat a little bit for a while, and sort of recuperate and recover. The problem is with mental health problems, and we are, I'll admit, assigning problems to him that we have no real evidence exists.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a bit.
In terms of, I wouldn't. It is a bit dangerous, but let's not call it mental health problems. Then let's call it the stress that he has undoubtedly been put under. With his situation at United, coming straight in as captain, with this whole Mykonos thing, which either he's the story that the Greek police told is either he's lying about it, which is a stress unto itself, where you've got to put this public twist on things that isn't true, or the story that he told, which was basically halfway towards some sort of Taken Liam Neeson type tale, where his sister's being drugged and all this sort of thing, and he's being tricked by cab drivers and police officers and all this sort of thing. Some sort of horrible, you know, like I said, movie style story. Either one of those stories, whichever one's true, it's a very stressful and difficult thing to do. And then come straight back in, like I said, he's the captain. He plays every week, no matter what. And one of the good things about Maguire last season, and I think it's massively underrated in terms of a trait of a player or a quality of a player, is his availability. So now, if he's available for games, we know that he's you know, Solskjaer wants to play him every game. If he then doesn't play, part of you thinks, well, there'll be stories written. Is this the beginning of the end for Maguire at United? We'll move on to Bruno in a little bit about how stories can be manufactured and how, you know, a bust up or a little back and forth, a little spat with someone can be blown into this irreparable damage has been caused to the relationship between X and Y. And you never know quite what's going on. Even if Solskjaer put his arm around Maguire and said, right, you're the team captain, you're going through a difficult time off the pitch, it's, you know, we can see that, we're going to give you a couple of weeks off. Even if that was what happened, you still know that half the newspapers would run with Solskjaer loses faith in Maguire, Solskjaer drops Maguire, will Maguire move back to Sheffield United to last, whatever. You're going to see all that shit. So you've got to know that any decision at this point comes with its own pressure. But I suppose it's about knowing the player, isn't it? And you'd hope that Ole, this is the sort of time where you get tested as a manager, because not just is it Maguire whose mettle is being tested and whose bottle is being tested a little bit with how he deals with the situation. But it is up to Solskjaer, it is up to Southgate, who we know Southgate tends to take the sort of the, I wouldn't say easy way out, but he takes the standard conservative line of, well, Greenwood and Foden had players there last week, so, had girls around last week, so we'll drop them and they can have the next week off. Like, he's very by the book, but take everything seriously. Mm-hmm. Now's a good time for Solskjaer to prove his actual, you know, as a manager, here's how you manage someone. This is human management here. So he's got a test ahead of him of how he deals with the situation, because it is undoubtedly a situation at this point.
I remember it was different circumstances again, because in these circumstances, you could put some personal responsibility onto Maguire, but you still have to look at the human being. You know what I mean? You still have to look at what's best for him. But I remember when Ronaldo's father died, and like we were in the middle of a season, and Fergie was just like, bro, just spend as much time as you need to, because he understood the importance of, well, the players have no benefit to me if he's not mentally there, or he's not his heart's not all in it. And that's how Maguire looks. I made that comment last week about Maguire, and you know, when Martial got sent off and Maguire just kind of like, oh well, they've checked it, it's fine, it's you kind of saw like just a dropping in his shoulders. He wasn't himself, because normally Maguire's in a referee's face. He's in, like, you know, he wants the decision, and he seemed to just be more concerned maybe about his own performance, which is fine. But as a captain, sometimes you need a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? Like, again, he's the greatest captain we've ever had. I know the old is going to kill me and say Robbo and that, but like Keno in Turin, he didn't feel sorry for himself. He got out there and he performed for the team. And I think at the moment you're seeing a captain that is, you can tell it's playing on his mind, and he's not going to go to the manager and say, boss, I need some time out, because he's probably thinking, I cost £80 million. They've given me the armband. If I now go to this, do I lose all of that? Like, so he's in a difficult position as well, where maybe he needs a break. We can't ask for a break. So it's a bit of a weird one, but I think personally, from his perspective and from a purely footballing perspective, we need to take him out of the firing line against Newcastle. Maybe even against PSG as well. What's going to happen if he plays against Newcastle? Plays against we get a victory, we get through, we scrape through or whatever. We play against PSG and he gets ripped to bits by Mbappe. Yeah.
If Mbappe flies past him and he has one... You know, and one thing about Maguire is we all know he's slow. He knows he's slow. We all know that. It is unusual to see him completely destroyed for pace, because he puts himself in good positions, which is why he's a good defender. Like the Bergwijn one against the Tottenham Bergwijn one, where he just flew past him last season, the first game back after lockdown, was one example I can think of. But generally speaking, he doesn't just get completely ripped for pace very often, does he? Where someone knocks it past him and flies past him, because he is a good defender. But if you saw Mbappe fly past him, or do you know, remember the goal that Mbappe scored at Old Trafford the season before last? Yeah, if it's one of them where Maguire's in position and Mbappe flies past him and taps the ball in the back of the net, you've got another level of, you know, come outside, all these kind of memes and shit. And it's just
it's getting worse. It's not, we're not allowing the situation to heal itself or fix itself because it's going to get worse. And I think, look, Lindelof and Bailly have had their issues, but they kept a clean sheet against Brighton. Like, I don't think we've... It's not like our defence has been amazing with Maguire in it. So let's do him a favour and just take him out. Now, there is a part to this. There's an angle to this, which, again, you cannot blame Maguire for, and that's where some of my frustration's coming from to some of the fans that are using it. There's an angle to this where people are saying the media hypocrisy. So yesterday we heard Gary Neville, Jamie Redknapp coming out and saying, Harry Maguire, he needs support. Yeah. Do you think there's hypocrisy in their punditry?
I do think there's hypocrisy in it, and I think pointing that hypocrisy out is somewhat fair. And not to try and steal your thunder here, because I've seen some of your opinions on this, but for example, the Paul Pogba comparison is the one we're seeing a lot, where we're saying...
And Sterling.
And Sterling, yeah, you see a lot of people saying when Sterling's having a tough time, when Pogba's having a tough time, they're called lazy, they're called selfish, they're called uninterested. When Maguire's having a good time, it's called mental health, it's called stress, it's called, you know, people get being sympathetic towards him. And again... I see why those comparisons are being made, and I see the underlying messages that are being sort of hinted at, and often with good reason in those comparisons. But, you know, as you've said here, I'm sort of quoting you almost. I don't think you should. The aspiration here should be to hold all people to the higher standard, not to try to drag down the goodwill that's being offered towards Maguire to. Well, you should call him shit as well. You should call him lazy as well, like you did with Pogba. Because when you call it Pogba that, it's unfair, it's not right, and it's, you know, arguably sometimes with racist undertones or something like that. But what you should want to do is Pogba. You should want Pogba and Sterling to be treated with more respect, not Maguire with less respect. Like, we should be aiming for the higher standard here, not let's drag Maguire down like we dragged Sterling and Pogba down. Let's elevate the way we treat.
Or doing the media's job for them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's a bit mad. And I think some people can't see that you can think. You can, like, people's, like, how they understand things is crazy at the moment. Like, because of this world where you either need to be fucking Ollie in or Ollie out, Wenger in or Wenger out. And, okay, you can say what we do maybe adds to some of that, like, debating things every day and all that. But we always try and be fair. And I think people can't understand that you're like the comprehension. You can easily think Harry Maguire needs to be dropped. Harry Maguire gets better treatment off the media. You can think Pogba and Sterling and all these guys are unfairly treated by the media, and some of it is racial, and they deserve to be treated better. You can think all of those things at the same time. Like, people seem to think you can only think one of those things, or you can't think, like, the people that are coming out and saying Pogba and Sterling are unfairly treated are doing the same thing to Maguire. So it's just a circle of, like, this daftness. Like, nothing gets resolved. And I feel it's not Maguire's fault as well. Like, Maguire doesn't write these articles about Pogba. He doesn't. So I think people should use these as examples that when Pogba and Sterling and others are unfairly treated, show them these articles, show them clips of Raheem of them talking about Maguire, because then that's when you're making your point. Now, I know for a fact, Pogba, if he goes to Mykonos, has a scrap, gets put in court, comes back, continues to have a mare. We know the angles on that story are very different. It's thuggery and it's violence and it's this, that, and the other. It's not.
Yeah.
Or maybe he didn't do anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's different. There's, do you know what I mean?
And what people would do as well is they would call up examples of his character that really I have nothing to do with anything. You know, any. Let's say it was the exact same situation with Pogba. People would say, "Oh, we've seen before he does this." They would find any excuse to make out like this is probably true. He probably did beat someone up, even though he's not like that. Or, you know, people, like I said, it would be thuggery and football gone mad. And here's how much his wages are. Here's how much all this is. Everything gets brought up. All that sort of stuff that you would see. I think one slight difference, obviously, is. The criticism that Pogba got for saying that he wouldn't mind going to Real Madrid. I think some of that was valid, and obviously that was the most recent criticism that Paul Pogba has received, I think, in terms of an off-the-field thing anyway. But generally speaking, we all know that Paul Pogba down the years has just been a dartboard pretty much for anyone who wants to slag off anything. He costs a lot of money. He seems to be happy. He seems to enjoy his life, which is something that you're not allowed to do unless you're winning the Ballon d'Or.
He danced at a wedding.
He danced once. Oh my God. And he played basketball. He threw a basketball. Right. Do you know when you throw a basketball and it puts loads of pressure on your ankle somehow? Yeah. He wasn't allowed to do that because he wasn't quite fit, but he could throw a ball.
Yeah.
And I just think,
it does get ridiculous. We've seen it.
It does get absolutely ridiculous. But that's no reason to.
Fans need to identify it, point it out, but not get involved in, like, why are you making it worse for someone else? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't be wanting to drag Pogba down to those bad, low standards. You should be wanting to elevate the treatment of all players to a level where you look at maybe the bit more of the human side or a bit more someone might be struggling.
Because I also see it in, and this, again, it doesn't come down to race. It maybe comes down to xenophobia rather, or the media's willingness to rush and protect anything that's associated to England. But you see it in the way they talk about De Gea and Pickford. And David De Gea has got a lot more credit in the bank than Jordan Pickford, do you know what I mean? And every time Pickford makes a mistake, keepers make mistakes, you know. Yeah,
he's still England's number one.
Yeah, it's like, well, he hasn't done it in an England shirt, but when it's De Gea, it's the end of the world. You know what I mean? You do see it with many different players, unfortunately. But I think us as fans, we need to not then say, well, you lot aren't being knobs to Maguire now, so we'll do it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now it's fair, because everyone's getting treated like
an idiot. Oh, so, shit. Yeah.
It's just annoying. Anyway, moving on from that to what we were going to talk about next. Bruno Fernandes.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from Maguire, actually, it's not been a bad international break for us. Donny van der Beek scored his first Dutch goal. Pogba with a sublime ball involved in the winner for France. Martial played in that game. By all accounts, he did all right in that match as well. We saw Victor Lindelof play against Portugal. Sweden lost. But Portugal won 2-0 with Bruno involved in that. Bruno's quotes after the game. So Rashford played for England.
Rashford scored a penalty in the win over Belgium as well, which was good.
Oh, yeah. He did, yeah. I was thinking about yesterday's fixtures, but you are right. We also saw Bailly play 90 minutes for Ivory Coast against Japan. They lost 1-0, but that was after we all thought he'd done his hammy. I know he just did it on purpose. A bit of cramp.
But yeah, these Fernandes quotes.
Yeah, go on. You got them.
Well, there's been stories coming out ever since the Tottenham game of a bust up at half time between Ole and Fernandes, or Fernandes and Maguire, or you know, different things depending on who you say on where you want to hear it from. Then there's this whole Twitter thing now where journalists, instead of writing an article on something, instead of putting their sort of neck on the line in terms of here's 600 words on something and here's a detailed explanation of it, you see bullet points written by one journalist and then another journalist quote tweeting those bullet points saying, yeah, that happened. And that's it. So there's no nuance, there's no context, there's no, it was like this, but it was much briefer than this. It was a short thing. It was this thing. It's Fernandes loses respect for Solskjaer, and then some Norwegian guy goes, yeah, he did. What's that? What journalist is that? You just agreeing with a bullet point. That's just provides so little context.
It allows Portuguese one as well. Is it Gonçalo Lopez who you just said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Tick. Thumbs up on it. You're like, that's not journalism. That's just, you're just saying yes to what someone else said. Bruno Fernandes. So for those of you who don't know, there was reports again, like we said, of Bruno Fernandes and Maguire falling out at halftime of the Tottenham match, which is why we didn't see Bruno Fernandes much in the second half. Then there was another report that came out that said, Fernandes has lost all respect for Solskjaer. That's it. He don't like him anymore. He thinks he's shit. He's not right, man, to take United to the next level. Bruno Fernandes has since come out and said, first they made up an argument with only one teammate, Lindelof, which I assume was the one on the pitch that we saw against Sevilla, I believe. He said, didn't happen. So now it's with Solskjaer. They're trying to destabilize the group. Don't use my name to make up a story, which is about as emphatic as a rebuttal as you're ever likely to see.
Keep my fucking name.
Piss off. Yeah, exactly. Which I really like for two reasons. One, first of all, it sort of allows me to believe, which I want to believe, that this story isn't true. And the second thing is, even if it is true, the fact that he's willing to come out like that and so staunchly deny it and so sort of across the board, this didn't happen, stop speaking about me.
I believe there's some truth in it.
I believe there probably is some truth in it too.
But I don't believe it's to the extent that he hates Solskjaer, has fell out with him, doesn't like him. I believe he was upset with the way we played against Spurs. I believe he felt some I believe he feels some sort of frustration in that. He seems to be doing his job in attack and our defence falls apart and everything goes wrong. And you can see he's one of those guys that's just, and he just gets really angry, probably tells everyone he fucking hates them during the game. And, you know, you've seen his head-to-head with Lindelof. They both speak Portuguese as well. So it was like, boom, they were both going at it proper. And I think, I like it.
Yeah.
I think we need that in the dressing room. I want someone maintaining standards in the dressing room. Like, okay, if it goes over line and you start falling out with your teammates, you don't want to see that. But I don't mind that. We need some. There were quotes that he was saying, we're Man United. What is going on? Like, how is this happening at halftime against Spurs? And because he'd lost his head so much, he couldn't go back out. Well, first off, that reminds me on the kickoff. I like nearly went at halftime. Like, I was gone. I was telling the players to walk off the pitch and everything. And it was like, my head went. Like, my head went and I can see how, like, I don't mind him. I think part of those reports are true, but they've been pushed even further. And I don't even think stories like that need to be written because that happens up and down the country, every football team. Yeah. And if it's not, be worried.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
If you're getting hammered and that's not happening,
you've
got a big problem.
Yeah, what do you want? Everyone to just sit there silently smiling, eating a sandwich at half-time or tucking into an orange slice? You want them screaming at each other.
What sandwich did you have at half-time, Joe?
Half-time, cheese plowman's, mate. But the thing, again, anyone who's ever played football at any level, from Sunday League to Premier League, will tell you the amount of stick and abuse that your teammates give you is twice as bad as anything you get from an opposition. What the fuck? Who said you could play football? You no point getting out of bed today, mate. You fucking shit. All that stuff. Like, that's just common.
What did he say? What are you thinking?
It's just common. It's still common. Like,
Luke, no. No. Luke.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
And
that would be a solid with Snake Eyes.
We live in a situation where people on Twitter love to put quotes from Roy Keane, from Michael Jordan, from all these people who are notoriously hard taskmasters, who hold their teammates to an incredibly high standard. This is what we need more of. We need players who know the United way, who know the truth. Look at Michael Jordan. Yes, he was a bully. Yes, he was an arsehole, but he got the best out of his teammates. He in the 90s, I think. We won six titles in 7 years. But you see this adoration of these sportsmen who are notoriously difficult to get along with, who are notoriously hold their players to a high standard, and you see their overwhelming support and people going, this is the standards we need. We need people in the dressing room doing this. We're soft. And yet at the same time, when you hear a story of someone having a go at their teammates and screaming and trying to hold this club to a standard that we, you know, like to think that we are at or we aspire to be at, then it's, oh, they're all falling out. This person's falling out. This person doesn't respect this person. It's like, this is what sportsmen do. This is what successful people do. You have to hold your teammates in your team to a standard that when that slips, it's like, if you hold yourself to this standard here, when you're performing at this standard, there has to be some punishment or some, you know, some upset or difficulty there, because otherwise, if you want to be here, but when you're actually mediocre, you're all just fine with it, then you're not holding yourself to that standard. The only way you hold yourself to a high standard is by being fucking furious when you're not at that standard. And I know United aren't ready to win the league or anything like that, but if we want to push ourselves to be what we like to think Man United are, then we need players who get upset and who scream at each other when it's not where it's meant to be. Because otherwise, when you say you hold yourself to a standard, part of holding that is being furious when we're not at that level. So the fact that it's, you know, a bit of a bust up in the dressing room has come down to Fernandez has irreparably lost respect for Solskjaer. He doesn't believe he's the right man. He's got to go. It's him or Solskjaer, all that shit. You just think, it's one game. Like, I don't think he was thinking that last season when we won, what was it, 17 games in 21 matches under Solskjaer when Fernandez first came in. I just think it's just been blown out of proportion again, which is what happens all the time.
I'll keep it short because we've got to move on to Golden Boy nominations. But like, I think a lot of people, like, the start to the season has been abysmal, conceding 11 goals in three games. Ollie deservedly needs criticism for that. The players deservedly need criticism for that. But I think a lot of it you have to put into context of having no pre-season, having a dreadful transfer window. And I feel the negativity of that has seeped through to the team a bit. It has definitely gone to the fans. And it's definitely gone through to the team. And I think you hear people talking about tactics, this and, oh, Ollie's not doing this and that and all these kind of things. But I remember between after we lost that back-to-back games against Liverpool and Burnley, between then until the end of the season, arguably when all our players were absolutely rinsed, the 11-12 we kept using, I was excited to watch every game that we were involved in. Like, we lost two games in the Cups between that period of time. We've now lost four games since January, which is a lot of games. Like, you don't want to be losing. But, like, I just feel like people have got very short memories at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, in that period, we were the best team in the league. We got the most points in the league from the Burnley game to the end of the season. And, you know, we've had four games this season, five games this season, three of which we've won.
You got top four because everyone else was shit. So that had nothing to do with us not losing a game between January and the end of the season.
Yeah.
That literally had, like, what?
Like, and because if United was shit, you would still get blamed for that, and yet you don't get any credit because everyone else is shit. You just think, what is the point? You can't win, can you? If you win games, it's because other people are shit. If you lose games, it's because you're shit. Piss off.
Fergie only won 13 league titles because everybody else was shit.
No one else was as good as him, so, and that's his fault.
Right, Talking about people that aren't as good as Mason Greenwood, there's an award for those that are trying to keep up with him. And the nominees are out, the 20 nominees. Here are the players from the Premier League. Shall we break them? We'll do it after, but these are the nominees. So, okay. Premier League, Bukayo Saka, deserved?
I would say so, assist-wise, he's been excellent, hasn't he?
I'd take him at United. Callum Hudson-Odoi?
I don't see how that's happened, to be honest.
Ferran Torres?
I don't know enough about him.
Valencia form. Did he play for Valencia?
Wherever they're sending him from in Spain, yeah.
I get confused between Ferran Torres and Pau Torres. Phil Foden? Mason's mate.
He's not had many minutes to be on that, is he? He's very highly rated, but he's not played much.
Anyway. Mason Greenwood?
Yeah, of course.
And Fabio Silva? He just signed for Wolves.
Yeah, I don't know enough about him, obviously, again, highly rated, but I couldn't really comment on that. Hudson-Odoi's a weird one. He's hardly played, and when he does, he doesn't do a lot, does he? And they didn't win anything last season.
He blagged his way to a very big contract at Chelsea, didn't he?
Well, according to the press, which we've just been slagging off for the last 30 minutes, so who knows how much truth there is.
But they gave him a big deal. Like,
over 100 grand a week.
The press reported it, yeah, but La Liga nominees are Ansu Fati, Sergino Dest, Rodrigo and Vinicius Jr. Bundesliga nominees are heavyweights. There's very few of them.
Boys.
Heavyweights. Alfonso Davis, yeah. Erling Haaland, and Jadon Sancho. That's probably the three front runners there. Liga, Jonathan David, Mitchell Bakker, and Eduardo Camavinga. Huge shout there.
Yeah.
Serie A, Kulusevski of Juventus, and Sandro Tonali. And from the rest of the world, Ryan Gravenberch of Ajax and Dominik Szoboszlai of Red Bull Salzburg.
Yeah.
So those are the nominees.
Some great players in there, let's be honest. And some players who, because of how good they are, like Sancho, you almost forget he's 20. Like, you think, how can he be up for Golden Boy? He's been world-class for 2 years, but that's just the standard that some of these players are at. Messi,
I think, got more goals and assists than him last year. Does that put him in pole position, do you think?
It's got to put him in pole position. We're talking a bit before the podcast about, I think Haaland would be another one, because for me, I obviously assists are very hard to get. No one gets 30 assists a season, and people do get 30 goals a season. But scoring a lot of goals as a young lad is very impressive to me, I always think, because it's such a, it's one of those things where you sort of, not a role model, but you have to be the focal point of a team to get that many goals that Haaland got. You just think that's a lot of responsibility on a young kid's shoulders, where we expect you to win games for us. And I know Sancho got 20 goals as well, so again, he would be the front runner. But for me, Haaland and Greenwood as well, because he didn't get as many goals as Haaland, but he's undoubtedly playing in a tougher league for a team that scores less goals. So yeah, I think goal scorers always end up with a sort of an unfair advantage, but I think some of that's deserved, because scoring goals is how you win matches, and when you rely on a kid to win your matches, that's a lot of pressure, and if you can live up to it, then fair play.
Mm. Last year's winner was Joao Felix. Matis de Ligt won the one before that, Kylian Mbappe. United have had four winners play for them. Now, the award's been going since 2003. That's your clue. Who are the four players that have represented Manchester United and won the Golden Boy?
Wayne Rooney.
Yep.
Cristiano Ronaldo?
Nope.
Who else could have won it? Marcus Rashford?
No.
Martial?
Yeah. He was the last one to win it in 2015. So you got to find two more.
I don't know. What's the maximum age on it? David De Gea?
No, you're all over the gaff here. In 2008, Anderson won it.
Of course. I remember that.
He just arrived. Paul Pogba won it in 2013. He was playing for Juventus at that time, but he won it. And Anthony Martial in 2015. Wayne Rooney in 2004.
Fucking hell.
Wayne
Rooney really lived up to that, didn't he?
Who do you think is going to win it?
I would guess Sancho will win it. I think that there's something. Haaland is one of those players, though, where he does seem to have a sort of an X factor to him, doesn't he? And I know he gets compared to Zlatan a lot, mostly because he's tall, strong, and Scandinavian. But he does seem to have a sort of a swagger and a confidence and an elusive sort of always a bit special feeling to him. And I know Sancho has that as well, but I wouldn't be surprised if the public opinion on Haaland maybe sways it his way.
Haaland can be nominated next year. So I think Sancho wins it this year. Haaland potentially next year.
Possibly probably.
Mason Greenwood, it's a shame he doesn't play for a good Manchester United team.
Yeah, or for Dortmund by the look of things. If he played for Dortmund, he got 30 goals last season, easy. He definitely would.
Oh, easy. If he played in France.
Yeah, imagine. God. Imagine
playing for France. Mbappe would have to work at McDonald's if Mason Greenwood played in France.
He definitely would. But Mason, obviously, incredible season last season, 17 goals. Also, let's not forget, he's 18 as well. He just turned 18 last season, halfway through the season. So
he's still got 2-3 years to win it.
Exactly. Whereas these lads are 20. I know it's not much different, but imagine Mason Greenwood's improvement in 2 years. I think there's still plenty of time for him to win it, for sure.
Most def. Next up for Manchester United, Joe, it's Newcastle. What's your thoughts on this pay-per-view thing? What are we doing on Saturday for the watch-along? Are we
we'll find a way to watch the game is what we'll do, Adam.
Are we going to pay for it?
I don't know how we're going to do that. I don't know if you pay through it for the pay-per-view. Do you get it through Sky Go still or what? I'm not quite sure how that works.
It's like getting the boxing, but my question to you is, are we paying for it?
I mean, what can we say on here? I don't know what we can say. What I will say is...
That's your answer.
What I will say is any person that deems it so unnecessary a fee to the point where they find an unofficial stream, I would not bat an eyelid at that, and I wouldn't think that was unfair or scamming the system or being dodgy or anything. Personally, I think it's a real shit move by Sky, personally, and the clubs that endorsed it.
It's a bit of a mad one, isn't it? Yeah, I would be up for us not paying for it.
Yeah,
I think think it gets to a point where it's just like, all right, how much more money do you want of us? You know what I mean? And 15 quid. Like, I could understand if it was a fiver.
Yeah.
Fiver. Yeah. Not too bad.
And the thing as well is, we know for a fact, and I said this before, but it started off, it was meant to be the 3 o'clock games where you can watch them for 15 quid. Well, we're playing 8 o'clock. So what's
that? Yeah, they moved the kickoff as well.
Exactly. They've moved it because it's now been built around a televised schedule, which is exactly what we're going to see. It was meant to be, usually the games at 3 o'clock kickoffs that weren't on telly were the, you know, least desirable matches, because obviously Sky picked the biggest matches to watch, because they know to view, because they know that they'll get the biggest figures. But whereas now, they're going to pick the biggest matches to be on this because they get 15 quid a go on this. So don't be surprised to see United every week, or City or Liverpool or Chelsea or Tottenham being put on this 15 quid thing, and they'll put the lesser teams on their usual slots because it makes them more money. Anything that can be used to make more money will be done. It's not like, here's an option, by the way, here's these games that are at 3 o'clock. We'll you can watch them at 3 o'clock if you want, because we're doing you a favour. It's going to cost you 15 quid because it costs a bit of money. It's not that. It's here's another way to make even more money. And it's just absolutely ridiculous. And the people that already pay for Sky...
Is it any better that the money goes to the Premier League and not to the TV companies? Because as far as I'm aware,
no, because
they're running costs out of it, and then the money goes to the Premier League.
For me, it's not, because that money goes to the Premier League one way or another anyway. The TV companies pay the Premier League the rights to watch the matches. So the Premier League then distributes that money down to the clubs anyway. Obviously, I'm sure they take... I don't know exactly how the finances work in terms of what they take out of those deals. But those deals that you see, 1.5 billion, 2 billion, all that sort of stuff, that money goes to the football teams anyway. So they're just getting extra money now. It's not like they didn't... I'm sure some of it was changed with COVID and stuff, but they just need more money all the time. And the fact that it's costing 15 quid to watch one match... Whereas usually, what is it, 20 quid? You get Sky Sports for the month on top of your usual subscription, 30 quid for the month. Mm-hmm. You might get to watch your team three times in that and 10 other matches. Whereas now it's 15 quid a week to watch your team.
And they say it's 15 quid for the premium product. But if it was so premium, why didn't you pick it to be on TV in the first place?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Exactly. Like, it's so that's premium. Here's the games that we didn't want to televise, but now we'll televise them for you. And you can pay 15 quid for them.
And you can pay more than you ever did before. And you can pay more as well than it costs for some tickets in Premier League grounds. You know, kids' tickets or student tickets in some stadiums. I know 15 quid would be very cheap, but like, you see that occasionally. You see, oh, this game hasn't sold out. There's tickets on the door for a tenner, this sort of thing. And you're charging 15 quid to watch it in your own house.
Well, it's half the price of an away ticket, isn't it? Because they'd be capped at 30 quid.
30, yeah, exactly. But even so, it's not half the product, is it?
And you can't smell the onions. You can't.
You don't get to meet your mates. You don't get to go for a beer. You can't, because it's illegal. You can't have mates around at your house. You can't have it as some, like with a boxing, it's once a month or once every 6 months. There's a big fight for, you know, usually British fights sell the most in Britain, I would assume, or UFC Conor McGregor or Anthony Joshua or Tyson Fury. It's 30 quid, pay-per-view, twice a year, three times a year, get all your mates around to your house, have a proper event, you know, make some nachos, have loads of beers, all that sort of shit, stay up till 4 a.m. Whereas this, no one's allowed to come around because there's COVID. Yeah, it's 15 quid for an 8 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday night. It's like there's no social element to it. You're taking all that away. You don't get any of that day out, that excitement that you get when you go to the match, especially people who don't go to the game every week, where there's that sort of giddiness almost of this is a special event. There's no special event feeling to paying 15 quid to watch a football match in your own house.
And also, watch McGuire and Lindelof run into each other.
And also, people talk about, oh, well, you know, boxing's more than that, or this is pay-per-view, or that's pay-per-view. There's no precedent for this. This feels wrong because it's new and because it's more than we've ever had to pay for anything before. So you can compare it to whatever you want, but if you compare it to football, this is new and worse.
Canadians pay for DAZN, I think it's around $20 a month, and they get Premier League, Serie A, everything, just everything.
Boxing. Everything.
So it's like, it's like we're also punished for living in, like, it's weird, but for living in the UK.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for, yeah, it's a bit of a mad one. But they've got us by the balls, I guess.
Yeah, because also now that the prices have gone up of players based on the back of this TV revenue, you see Neymar go for 200 million, you see Mbappe go for 150 million, Pogba 90 million, Maguire 80 million. They're also on wages that reflect those transfer fees. So whereas, you know, 15 years ago when, or 20 years ago when Zidane went to Real Madrid, it was 45 million, which was an incredible fee at the time. He went on 350 grand a week. He was on a wage that reflected what was a record fee at the time, which was much less than that. So now they need to keep this money coming in to pay players every week, to keep, you know, these transfer budgets going up. We can't go back now, but they've made it so that what happens is when they need to reflect the cost they are spending on players, they have to charge the consumer 15 fucking quid to watch a match at home. And it's only when this happens and it boils back down to the normal person, do you realise how ridiculous things have got?
It's mad.
Shit.
Like, I feel like a big, again, it'd be difficult because it'd make it difficult to get tickets and where do you, but some clubs, like for Manchester United, for example, they could almost let fans free at the gate. Like the amount of money they make, they could almost do that. Obviously, they're not going to. And it's understandable you're going to charge for a ticket. But like to some clubs, the gate receipts are so little that obviously lower down the pyramid, they rely on those. But like some of these, they don't need that. They don't need that.
Well, they say that, but what is it, 5 million quid a match day that United make apparently?
Yeah,
20 games a season, that's, you know, 50, 60 million, which obviously as a percentage of their overall, you know, net income would only be maybe 10%. So yeah, maybe for the sake of, imagine it was free entry at United. Obviously you had to apply through a ballot. And well, all you could have
even half the price.
Yeah. Yeah, 200 quid season tickets. 200 quid season tickets, 15 quid entry, 5 quid for kids. Imagine that. The joy and the amount of goodwill that they would get from doing something like that. And that way you'd almost go, well, the fact that we've fucked up in the transfer market again, at least we're letting this product be seen by as many people from different backgrounds.
We're paying for what we see.
Yeah, exactly. It's shit, but it's cheap. Whereas now it's shit and it's fucking 50 quid a ticket.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so the Newcastle match. What are you thinking? Are you nervous? Away, obviously.
I'm nervous for the whole. I think this game we could get, because Newcastle, I know we haven't been great, but Newcastle haven't been great either. I know they beat West Ham opening day, and then they got battered by Brighton at home. Like they've been up and down. They had a good result against Spurs at Wembley. Sorry, at Spurs Stadium, but they're up and down. So I think we should be beating them, but I'm aware of what's on the horizon beyond that. And a bad result against Newcastle.
Oh,
it's going to be a long month.
We already don't have much confidence. And it could be up there
with the December under Van Gaal if fixtures go a certain way. And that's
those of you haven't seen it. It's literally like PSG, Chelsea, Arsenal, Everton, PSG, Leipzig, in it for the next sort of 4 weeks, something like that.
I got the fixtures on my phone, so here we go.
Yeah, if you can get that Newcastle up, but yeah.
Newcastle on the 17th, PSG on the 20th. 24th, we have Chelsea. 28th, we have Leipzig. 1st, we have Arsenal. 4th, we have Istanbul. 7th, we have Everton.
Fuck.
21st, we have West Brom. Bit of respite. Istanbul, Southampton away. That's our up until the end of November. And then the start of December, we have PSG at home. PSG at home in December, West Ham away, Leipzig away, City at home.
Fuck it, and then into Christmas. And then into Christmas, lads.
And then into Christmas, it's Sheffield United away, Leeds United at home, Everton away, Leicester away. Oh, it's going to be a fucked up Christmas.
I don't want to be over the top here, but of those 20 games you've listed, I could feasibly see us losing 18. I think we'll be.
I could see us winning 18 as well.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
These kind of runs, Ollie kind of gets a little
spring in his cock.
Yeah, we beat everyone. I don't know what it is about these.
Yeah,
and then we'll probably go lose to West Brom in the middle of it all.
Well, the thing as well is, let's say, you know, like you said, you've listed about 15 games there. If you could say, we'll win 8, draw 5, lose 3, or whatever the numbers is there, draw 8, lose 7, win 8, lose, draw 7, lose 3. Of those 15 matches, if you do it in the right way, where you lose to PSG, but you beat Leipzig, you draw to Leipzig away, but you beat Istanbul, we can have some bad results in that run and only drop sort of 6 or 7 points in the league and still be second in that Champions League group. It's not about winning every game. It's about not losing the right games, if you know what I mean. So if we lose to Leeds and West Brom and draw against PSG and lose to Chelsea, it could be disastrous. But you could have the same set of results, is what I'm saying, and it still be quite good.
We could draw. Like, if we draw against Newcastle, it's fine. Yeah. But if we beat Newcastle and draw against PSG, it's not bad.
No. Yeah. Whereas, drawing against Newcastle and beating PSG is worse. I'd rather draw at PSG and beat Newcastle because you've got time to make up.
Never played for a draw unless it was away against PSG. Is that what he said?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's what he said.
Exactly. I think it sounds like something he'd say, doesn't it? I'm not. Obviously, we're not going for a draw in any of those matches, but it'll be interesting to see how the results can sort of change what it feels like over those games, even if you get a similar set of results. We've got to lose the right ones and win the right ones. Obviously, like losing to Leeds and losing to fucking Newcastle would be awful.
But it's possible.
It is possible.
I know we're doing a preview.
Yeah, we've got a preview coming out on Friday as well tomorrow. But for the Newcastle match, I'm going to go. It's going to be really tough because we're just not good enough to beat any team comfortably. But I think we'll win 2-1.
I think we'll win. I think Danny van der Beek has to start.
Yeah.
I think we should start Mata, Danny, Bruno, and Rashford, and Greenwood, Jesus. And everyone.
And Marshall.
I suspended Marshall.
No defence. The defence hasn't been good enough, so you're none of you playing. We start from the midfield, we just have 10 here.
Just pass it out from the back, innit? So you just play your attackers in defence. And Maguire up front.
Yeah, great idea. Have you got a Wally of the Week?
We know who it is, but I'm not going to give it him because we're trying to be nice.
Steve, you're not coming on the podcast.
No. Don't forget to at Mr. Stephen Allison at Stretford Paddock with what was it?
You're a disgrace or something. I can't remember what it was.
Well, we said it at the start, so I don't remember.
Yeah, we said it at the start. Go back and check.
But tweet him anyway, some abuse.
We're back in the studio tomorrow as well, for anyone who's wondering. We are coming off the back of our isolation time. Back in the studio tomorrow, so it's going to be good. I can't wait to be back.
Saturday's
really good. Wally of the Week then, go on. Don't mean to go first, what are you thinking?
We know who it is, isn't it? I think, but we've been trying to be nice to him in this video.
What, Maguire?
I've been laying into him for time. So Gareth Southgate's Wally of the Week.
There you go. That's yours.
For picking Maguire.
Picking him, for fuck's sake. I'm going to go with whoever it was who came out with that report that Bruno Fernandes has irreparably fallen out with Solskjaer and he thinks he's a bag of shit and he'll never look at him again. No. Whoever spread that rumour.
Wait, new Wally of the Week.
Who?
Project Big Picture Bellends.
Nice.
Glazers and Henry. They are the Wallys of the Week, aren't they? Like, I hate that Manchester United and Liverpool. Well, I don't care what happens to Liverpool's name, but whenever you see a headline, it's Manchester United and Liverpool take on the Premier League, but it's not actually that. It's these people that have taken control of these clubs.
Yeah.
And obviously they represent us, but it just makes me feel a bit sick that these American businessmen, forget what nationality are, these guys are basically doing it for their own needs. And what they've done to United, which is pillage us and take all our money, they're trying to now do to the Premier League.
It's no surprise, is it, that someone called Henry is trying to hoover up all the money in the Football League? That's no surprise to me at all.
And a Glazer's being a leech. It's no surprise.
No, exactly.
He's been doing it for 15 years. Mm-hmm. More if you ask the Tampa Bay fans.
The bastards.
But they got Tom Brady, though. I suppose that's
all. Yeah, that's all that matters. A 43-year-old Tom Brady who's won 6 Super Bowls with another team who was really good around him.
Is that like bring? Do you reckon that they'd probably bring Ronaldo back and give him 500 grand a week when he's 39, won't they?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Get Ronaldo after his contract at Juventus is finished up. He's retired from international football, and you get him in on a free.
Signing on fee, 30 million.
Yeah, agent fee, 30 million. million a week wages.
But we can't sign Sancho.
No, too expensive.
Oh man, I'm so certain he was going to be playing for us. You know,
I can't even believe it. I still haven't admitted it to myself because we haven't played since the
window. I'm pretending he's injured.
I'm still thinking, what if they just do something? Like maybe they said, "Oh, guess what? I'm expecting him to just." You know, like Fergie used to sometimes say that someone was injured and then play him anyway in the press conference. I'm expecting like, no, yeah, we couldn't get all of our targets, and then the next day. Oh my God, that Sancho's music, WWE style, is on the lineup for Sky Sports.
Deadline day.
That's what I was hoping for. But I'm still hopeful. Just because the deadline's ended doesn't mean the deal can't still be done or that it hasn't been done and hidden. Sancho will play against Newcastle, I'm telling you right now.
That's what that surprise party was about. It was to celebrate his move.
Yeah, exactly.
Should be fun. Anyway, that's it for today. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to get your abuse into at Mr. Stephen Arson at Stretford Paddock on Twitter. You say you call him a letdown, sellout. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. So that's good.
The virus of Stretford
Corporate Paddock. Corporate shill.
That's a good one. Yeah. Just call him a Tory as well if you want. Just ask him where was he? Where was he when we needed you the most? Because he wasn't here. Anyway. Joe, anything you want to say?
No, just happy to be back on the watch along on Saturday for the Newcastle match. Back to sort of more regular programming on the channel, back in the studio, back with a bang.
Back with a bang. Back with a bang. We'll be back. See you later.
Sports Social Podcast Network.